Hey Ding Dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent but curious young man, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my good friend, Richard Lamb.
Adoy,
man,
the genius.
I'm getting really good. I'm getting really good at that intro.
Yeah, that intro's kind of written itself.
It really has.
Which is just like when Jamie and I had a Greek myth themed improv duo called Olimprov.
Oh yeah.
We also had like an extremely codified opening that we just discovered
as we
slowly went. Actually, we discovered it pretty quickly in like two or three shows. We had that opening down.
That's right. As the river cuts through rock, it's not through brute strength, but rather perseverance.
That's right.
Yeah, we carved it out for ourselves. This is not a normal episode. This is a crazy episode. Not super crazy. This is a bonus episode, which we're doing every now and then. Now they're more like little tidbits. They're just shorter little news updates.
That's right. We do midweek bonus episodes, and it's kind of like a flexible slot. Like sometimes we'll do a double dip where we'll revisit a topic we've already talked about, or sometimes we'll do an Albright Safari, which is where we kind of look into a specific text and talk about it or something like that. But also we do little time-specific updates. So like updates where I wanna or we wanna
travel through time
specifically, and then act as though we're recording the podcast with the technology of that time. So, welcome to Renaissance Venice, everybody.
Rick, I'm not so sure about this.
Come on, Morty.
No. We went so many episodes without pretending we were just making Rick and Morty audio fan fiction.
Yeah, I know. I missed it.
Yeah.
This week we are handling the British election.
That's right.
/ British current events.
That's right, because I feel like it's good to explain, especially specifically elections, before they happen, but then that episode will quickly, the information in it will become irrelevant once the election happens, right?
Sure.
So that's why I think this is the nice compromise. So let's talk about the British election, what's going on, what's in play, and how this is all going to shake down.
Do you wonder if, because reporting on something before it happens, it loses its cachet quickly, and then reporting on something after it happens, it also arguably loses its cachet. Do you think the answer is not to report on anything at all?
Or only report on things that are happening in the exact present, destroying them as you go?
Yeah. Hey, that's a good idea. We could just get rid of the internet altogether and move back to like a feudal messenger system.
Well, Jamie, as you're about to hear, that might be what's in store for England after this election. So let's get into it.
Da 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 da. God save the Queen. She is our Queen. We are from Britain. It is a monarchy, sort of.
I'm so glad Jesus made her the queen. I'm still mad about Gandhi.
Beautiful.
Oh, man. Britain has such a better theme song than our podcast.
Yes, for your consideration, Britain, a new and perhaps more on-point set of lyrics for your national anthem.
Yeah. No, those are the historical lyrics. Oh. It's three measures of humming, followed by the words, God save our queen.
Yeah, King James changed it at the same time he changed the Bible.
That's right, and in the King James days, they were all really confused about the Gandhi reference, but that's what you get when you let Nostradamus write your theme song.
So, we got a British election, Richard.
Yeah, that's right, Jamie. So what did you know, if anything, about the British election that's about to happen?
Honestly, nothing.
Literally nothing?
They just had their big Brexit vote like a number of months ago.
Almost a year ago, actually.
A year ago. And I sort of thought that would be the last I would ever hear from them.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to have the Brexit vote. Then there was going to be like the purge.
That's right.
You'd be like, what happened to England? And you're like, I guess it's not a country anymore.
Yeah, what happened to Rome? Dumb. Keep with the time.
Yeah, that's right. The Visigoths pillaged England. Yeah, it's now the most goth country in the world.
Cool.
Sorry, Norway.
So they had an election for the prime ministership.
That's right. They're having they have an election for their House of Commons like we do. We have the same system as them, more or less, except they have the kooky House of Lords and we just have the annoying Senate.
Right.
Britain is not supposed to have an election for another 3 years.
Right.
But Theresa May.
Shit went crazy.
Yeah, so the Brexit happened.
Right.
And after the Brexit, which, I mean, we're going to do a full episode on the Brexit. We have it scheduled for next month. So I know it's been kind of a conspicuously missing giant political topic that could probably use some explaining from the roster of things we've been talking about. But the reason that we haven't talked about it yet is because we have some real limey Brits coming to visit. So
Wahoo!
We're going to have them on the show in June and we're going to all talk about the Brexit. So that's for your information. That's
right.
Why that
It'll
hasn't
keep,
happened yet.
Right?
It'll oh, yeah. Keep. Oh, it's going to be relevant as fuck. Especially in June, because in June, the election will have happened and then we'll actually be able to kind of speculate on how it's going to go. Because, okay, we'll dive right into it.
Okay.
So they weren't supposed to have an election for 3 more years.
Huh.
But after the Brexit, you know, David Cameron, who was the prime minister at the time, conservative prime minister of Britain, who kind of called the referendum on the Brexit it was like calling the bluff of the people who wanted the Brexit, because he expected it to not pass, right? He expected the vote to fail. He stepped down. He resigned after the Brexit vote passed because it was, you know, he essentially destroyed Britain.
Yeah, he's like, I'll put everything on red.
Yeah, that's right.
What's
exactly.
That? And he green lost. Double zero.
Yeah, that's right. It's like it was poker and he lost.
Yeah.
And so the woman who took over for him, her name is Theresa May.
Right.
And she suddenly found herself the Prime Minister of England and of the United Kingdom.
Classic story.
And she was trying to negotiate the Brexit. She takes a pretty hard line on the Brexit, but not as hard as the hardest line. Mm. And so she was facing all this opposition from inside her own party about how, like, what the details are, blah, 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 blah. And so basically she called this election as a way to get a stronger mandate on the Brexit.
Mm.
She wants, this election is like another Brexit. It's like the UK gets to vote for what kind of Brexit it gets, basically. That's like what this election's all about.
Before we get too far away from this, I had an idea, and I am too self-absorbed in my ego not to share it.
Go on.
It's an idea for a play in which it's like a take on The Prince and the Pauper,
uh-huh.
in which all of the government higher-ups fuck up so badly that there's just, like, a huge destruction, and then some unseemly, like, person just inherits the prime ministership of Britain.
Yeah, it's like some hobo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. He has to work it out. Or she. Or she.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's as far as that idea went.
That could be fun. What would it be called? It should have some, like, pun name, though. It should be, like, Wishing Chips. Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
No, okay, so Theresa May calls this election because she basically wants people to validate her as the prime minister. She wants to be able to say, look, like, because right now, you know, she didn't get elected, right?
Right.
She took over because the last guy resigned.
Right, so she's the interim heavyweight champion of the world.
Exactly. So She wants to be able to say, look, here's my plan. The people voted for me, so fucking deal with it, you assholes. Like, it's basically kind of where she's at. Because she's facing a lot of grumpy opposition from inside her own party about not being hard enough on the Brexit.
Mm.
She's still quite hard on the Brexit, like, for how hard she could be on the spectrum of how hard one can be. She's fairly hard. Mm-hmm. Now, the hard Brexit versus a soft Brexit is something we will talk about on the Brexit.
Okay.
But basically, it refers to, like, does Britain get to still have a good trade deal with the EU and access to what's called the single market, right? Which is like the EU as a single economic market instead of, like, each country individually.
Mm.
Or will it be forced to, like, renegotiate new trade deals with every single individual country in the EU. A soft Brexit means it basically stays plugged into the EU the way it is now. A hard Brexit means it basically is like on its own and has to do everything from scratch.
Okay.
Right? That's the big difference. And a hard Brexit also carries the implication that there's going to be harder anti-immigration reform. Basically, like, it's like the racist mean one.
Right.
Is the hard Brexit. And the soft Brexit is the more progressive one. But we'll pause there and talk about that when we talk about it later.
Right.
So she calls this election. She also called the election because she was in a very, very strong position all of a sudden. Like, her popularity was very high. It was in the, like, mid-40%, which is, you know, in a country like Britain or like Canada, where it's a first-past-the-post system, if you get mid-40s of the vote, you're going to get a devastating margin, right? Like, a devastating majority,
right,
which is what she was on the polls to get. And she's in that position for a number of reasons. The first is that in the last election, which was in 2015, there was this party called UKIP, the United Kingdom Independence Party, and they were the main engine behind the Brexit. There was, like, that dude Nigel Farage.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was his party.
That's right.
And obviously he doesn't run that party anymore because he fucking ran for the hills once the Brexit actually passed.
Right.
That loudmouth, enormous turd.
Yeah.
But
he always strikes me as, like, he would be perfect casting for, like, the safari suited British man who's, like, shows up to take over a village and is, like, can't understand why they don't know what teacups are.
Totally. You know? He's like the dude who comes out of Jumanji.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Abso-fucking-lutely he is. And so the UKIP had been quite powerful in the 2015 elections. It got about 13% of the popular vote, although because it's a first-past-the-post system, they only got one seat, which is like a tiny, tiny, insignificant minority, right?
Right.
But they were very, very popular. They got millions of
votes.
But
for a marginal, like, new party, they're new, right?
Yeah, they're new. They're only around for about 7 years.
Like, 13% is pretty good. I'd be happy if I started a political party and we got 13% of the vote.
Right, but they were pissed off because they could have had easily, like, you know, another party that got marginally more votes than them would get, like, 8 or 9 seats.
Right.
So they should have had more. And they would have, under a proportional system, they would have had a lot more.
Right.
But they, in the most recent municipal elections, so they were like city elections, council elections, I'm doing air quotes, only a couple months ago.
I can see you, Richard.
Yeah, because of that, everyone listening to this can also see me. So in the most recent council elections, they were destroyed. UKIP, like, got obliterated. They lost all the, basically every single Midland council that they had had. Mm. And it was because, now that the Brexit's passed, the Conservatives kind of represent the interests of the people who want the Brexit. The people who are mad about immigration, the people who are old and racist, and the people who think that leaving the EU is in Britain's best interest. Suddenly, the Conservatives, who have the majority in Parliament now and who look like they might have a majority in Parliament after the election, are the ones who they want to be talking to. They're the people who are going to be in charge of the Brexit. So UKIP as a party has kind of made itself irrelevant by successfully getting the Brexit vote on the docket. Nobody's going to vote for them anymore because now the Conservatives are the ones who are shepherding through the Brexit.
Right. So it's sort of like the opposite of Bernie Sanders in the Liberal Party.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, man, I'm killing it.
Like, I mean,
can,
like,
you believe it? 18 episodes we've gone through now. I am already, like, measurably more,
you kind of know what you're talking about. Right.
Mind you, I say that, and I'm about to make the stupidest comment in the world.
Right. Yeah. You're going to be like, all cats are girls and all dogs are boys.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, no. So what's happening is because people aren't voting for UKIP, most of those people are going to go to the Conservative Party. So the Conservatives are in a strong-ass looking position. They started with a lot of popularity, and it looks like a lot of people who voted in the past for UKIP and actually kind of bled support away from the Conservatives are going to go back to them.
Okay, I'm making sure. Conservatives in Britain are the same thing they are here.
That's right.
Right-wing, they're a right-wing party.
That's right, and I would compare...
Labour Party is the left-wing party?
That's right, and we'll talk about them in a second.
Okay.
But I would compare the, like, UKIP Conservative dynamic again to, like, the Alberta Conservative Wild Rose dynamic. It's like there's, like, the main right party that's kind of, like, more mainstream right wing, and then there's, like, the Crazy People Party.
Right.
UKIP was the Crazy People Party. Now the mainstream right wing party has taken in a lot of their ideas.
Right.
Now, part of the other reason that the Conservatives look pretty strong going into this election is because the main alternative party to them, the Labour Party, is looking sort of unprecedentedly weak. And they're looking that way for two major reasons.
Okay.
One of the major reasons is, after Labour was destroyed in the 2015 election, like, they just did very poorly, there was a big leadership shakeup. And what happened was they held their leader resigned and they held a leadership race like they would have in Canada if you lose a big election, right?
Yeah.
And the guy they ended up electing was a true leftist. Jeremy Corbyn is his name. You probably have heard his name.
Yeah, I heard it.
So Jeremy Corbyn is like, again, this is a glib comparison, but it's useful. It's right. like if Bernie won the primary.
Right.
So suddenly,
Jeremy Corbyn, he's the host of the Late Late Show, right?
That's right.
Yeah, he does carpool karaoke.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. His co-host is a robotic skeleton.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
No, that's Craig Ferguson.
That's Craig
And James Corden,
oh.
who we are mixing up.
Look at you knowing names.
Yeah. I watch late night shows. Yeah.
So this is like what would have happened to the Democrats if Bernie Sanders had won the primary, in that the Labour Party in Britain for a long time were the party of Tony Blair. Tony Blair, you'll remember, was the prime minister when we were in high school. He was the prime minister about 10 or 15 years ago.
Also nominated coolest name for a politician 10 years in a row.
Yeah. And Blair was famously a proponent of this thing called the Third Way, which right. was not small government conservatism and not like basically socialist leftism. It was the third way. It was like being progressively and socially to the left and economically more to the right. Mm. So this is, you'll recognize this as basically like the neoliberalism that the Liberal Party in Canada and the Democratic Party and Angela Merkel, and like these are kind of all the things that those people believe in. So
right.
so Tony Blair was the UK's version of that guy, and Labour under Tony Blair was that party. They had, you know, very close ties to business interests, even as they were a bit, they were socially fairly progressive, right? Mm-hmm. So suddenly this party that has spent all these years in power being very tied to business and very tied to the EU has a true leftist as its leader. And to give an example of how left-wing Jeremy Corbyn is, in this election, his platform includes a massive tax on the richest 5% of UK earners, including something called, literally, he calls the fat cat tax, which is if you make over a million pounds, then you get another additional, like, extremely high tax rate.
Right. And that is manifested as an insatiably hungry cat.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to that's feed right. all
eats,
the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Until your money gets back to normal.
It's actually just poor people in cat suits. You have to have them at your house
right.
and feed them. No. So he wants to take a shitload of money from rich people. He has no tax increases for anyone who's under the top 5% earners in Britain, and use it to fund things like free university tuition for everyone. Mm. He wants to renationalize all of the railways in Britain. He wants to nationalize the water company. He wants to invest a shitload of money in the Britain's National Health Service, which is their version of single payer, but they also run all their hospitals, the government.
And their health service is in a bit of trouble right now, isn't it?
Privatization
is going pretty hard.
That's right. So he wants to reverse all the privatization. Like one of his measures is like free parking at all hospitals, right? So there's this is left-wing, very left-wing stuff.
Here's a little anecdotal story. A friend of mine that lives there, she was telling me that when they if you're in labor for like over a certain amount of time, that they push you to get a C-section, because it costs money to occupy your bed,
right?
So like I don't know the numbers, but apparently most people who get C-sections in Britain wouldn't actually need one. They're just getting it to make it cheaper for the hospital. So her midwife, she was like, you know, she was a bit edgy on whether she wanted a midwife or not. I hope I'm not bastardizing this story, but it seemed that way. She was like, I don't know, do we want one? She got one, and her midwife's main job in the hospital was barring the door shut while she was in labor in her hospital bed, because they were coming to give her a C-section.
Oh my God.
She like put a chair under the doorknob, and it's like, I'm not, I know when she's dilated enough, I'll give you guys a call when it's ready.
Holy shit.
And so she like physically stood in the way of the hospital staff getting into that room until my friend was ready to give birth.
I think that's what the movie Children of Men was about. Like, I feel like that's the ending sequence of Children of Men.
Metaphorically.
Yeah.
Metaphorically, it was exactly about that.
Yeah, so Corbyn's quite left-wing, and because he's quite left-wing, for the left in Britain, it represented like an incredible resurgence of hope that they could start undoing like the damage of neoliberalism, right? Mm-hmm. That like they could start reversing income inequality and create a Britain for the many instead of the few. That's one of his quotes.
Mm.
You know, hard to argue with, I find.
Sure.
But the people inside his own party, especially the so-called the Labour right, like the more right-wing people inside Labour, the ones with closer connections to business, the ones who believe more in neoliberalism, have tried many times to sabotage, get rid of him, and constantly are leaking stories about him to the press, constantly are making it very hard for him to do his job, essentially. He's faced basically a constant state of opposition from his many people in his own party since he was elected, but he's kind of just handling it.
Right.
The UK media is also really biased against him because media, like newspaper owners, don't like him. So this bias reflects in all kinds of ways. First, for like example, often newspaper editors will just order coverage of whatever issues make him look the worst and don't order coverage of the issues that make him look the best.
Right.
They'll also include like a lot of editorialization in articles that are just about him, right? And they rarely let him, his own words appear in stories about him.
Right.
Right? So there's real bias against him.
But that's sort of par for the course for British politics, though.
Yeah, British politics is gray.
Yeah. And the newspapers are always an issue in Britain.
Yeah, they're really, like, the British tabloids make Canadian newspapers look like the Encyclopedia Britannica. Like, and Canadian newspapers are in dire, horrible shape.
Yeah.
And British newspapers make them look like, every single one looks like the Magna Carta. Like, it looks like this, like, priceless document. They're really sensational and immoral a lot of the time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, what's funny is that there's a law in the UK that once an election starts, you have to kind of like dedicate a certain amount of coverage to being fair and actually like letting the candidates speak and publishing their actual platforms and stuff like that. And since the campaign has started, I mentioned Theresa May, the Conservatives started with like a really significant lead, like double digit, 14 to 15 point lead. Now it's into single digits. So Corbyn is picking up a lot of support. He actually, and a Labour support passed the Conservatives in Wales, which was a big deal, only this week. As people are realizing, hey, wait a minute, the things he's suggesting actually would make my life a great deal better.
Right.
And there's a lot of, you know, the left has a lot of solutions for the things that are making people angry and seeking the far right, right? The inequality, the hard economic times that people feel, there are solutions for those on the left that don't involve racism and closing the borders and closing the countries off, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the hope, is to reach out to those people. It's difficult to do that in Britain through the prism of the distorted media world and media landscape, but it is starting to happen a little bit. So that's cool. It's cool that Corbyn's picking up steam. He's also in trouble, though, because a huge part of Labour's support base traditionally is in Scotland. And Scotland is pissed right now because, you may recall, in 2014, Scotland had a separation referendum.
That's right.
Right? And during that referendum, the Labour Party said, you should stay and you should be a part of the UK, even though Scotland's been a massive bastion of Labour support over the years. And a lot of Scottish people felt that they were pretty condescending to Scots and dismissive of the idea of Scottish nationalism and Scottish identity. So even though the referendum ended up not passing and Scotland remains a part of the United Kingdom, there was some damage done for the Labour Party with its own reputation among people in Scotland. And that was massively exacerbated when the Brexit happened, because Scottish people agreed to stay part of the UK and now are being dragged out of the European Union, right? So there's like, now people are phenomenally pissed. There's almost certainly going to be another Scottish independence referendum in the next couple of years. And if there is one, there's a very good chance Scotland will leave the UK now.
Yeah.
And because of that, there's an independence party, the Scottish National Party, that is surging ahead of the polls in Scotland.
And the leader of that is Mel Gibson, right?
That's correct. Yeah. No, actually, it's a woman. Hold on. I wrote down her first name. I didn't want to get it wrong. Her name's Nicola Sturgeon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's a Scottish name.
Yeah. Yeah. And she showed her blue painted ass to all the cameras south of Hadrian's Wall or whatever. Yeah.
They fought like warrior poets. They fought like Scotsmen.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that's what you, I believe all of Scottish politics is just quotes from Braveheart.
Yeah.
And a lot of, and everyone dancing to 500 miles by the Proclaimers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the Scottish National Party is
the Proclaimers Scottish?
I think so. They sound really Scottish. I'm almost 100% positive they're Scottish.
Probably. Maybe. I have no concept. We'll double dip that. If you know the answer, Tweet us.
Yeah.
With a snarky remark.
At Explain Jamie.
Yeah.
Tweet us if the Proclaimers are Scottish or not, because I don't know.
Yeah. If there's no sass, we will ignore it.
Yep. There must be sass. Yeah, and so the Scottish National Party is taking a lot of support off Labour. So where Labour would traditionally pick up a lot of seats and then move closer to a majority, the Scottish National Party is going to get a lot of those seats, it looks like. And that's not good for Labour. But that's kind of like all the people in play. There's a bunch of other smaller parties in the UK, like the Liberal Democrats, who are like a centrist party, like a lot more right-wing party, but they're like, we're not racist, sort of, but we, but we're not left-wing.
Right. I like to think of those as the good conservatives.
Yeah. I mean, it would be, I don't know, it's hard to think of them as entirely good because they're like very much neoliberal people.
Right.
And they're trying to kind of hedge their bets in between Labour and the Conservatives as, you know, on the political spectrum, but I don't know. They're not a significant force right now in the election. It doesn't look like they're going to... Like, they're not pulling a lot of votes from Labour, and they're not going to take a lot of votes from the Conservatives because the Conservatives are getting so many people from UKIP.
Hmm.
A lot of the UKIP voters are undecided, though, so we'll see where they end up voting and what's going to happen. Mm. But it does look like it looks like the Conservatives are probably going to win, whether they win with a crushing majority or a small majority or whatever, or if they have to go into coalition in a minority, remains to be seen. What's interesting is that Theresa May famously is campaigning really safely and like kind of conservatively, wahahaha, but I mean that. Like, she doesn't do unscripted public appearances ever. She didn't do the debates. She, like, only shows up, answers exactly the questions that have been prepared, and leaves. And there's a lot of speculation about that. I mean, really, they started so high, they're just trying not to lose.
Right.
Right? They're just trying not to lose. It's their election to lose.
Seems like a losing proposition.
Well, that's the thing,
I mean, in my experience, that's how you lose hockey games.
Well, what's interesting is that they started off really high, and now Jeremy Corbyn's suddenly gaining on them, because as their actual platform that has nothing to do with the Brexit comes out, people are like, whoa.
Right.
This is crazy, because they're a party of like hard austerity, right? Again, the opposite of stimulus. So cutting, they want to cut stuff back.
Yeah.
Most their biggest bungle so far has been this thing that's being called the dementia tax. It's a bit arcane, but I'll do my best to explain it.
Right.
So right now in Britain, they have the National Health Service, which is like the public health insurance. Uh-huh. And there's if you're older, there's certain kinds of care that you can get that's funded through the National Health Service. So the example is like cancer. If you get cancer, you're under the National Health Service. But there's other kinds of care that are like long-term care or home care that aren't funded through the National Health Service. And an example is like Alzheimer's. You can't get National Health Service funding to pay for like somebody to give you home care for Alzheimer's or to go into like a long-term home for Alzheimer's, right? Mm. And so Theresa May proposed changing the way it just has to do with what's covered under the national insurance policy and what isn't.
Right.
It's like one of the lines that got drawn for whatever reason.
Like, I don't know, though. Like, that's one of those things that... But why? That's one of the worst things I can imagine. Just saying like, oh, you got that? You're on your own.
Yeah.
Because like, you literally cannot look after yourself.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe I'm taking it personally. So, my grandpa had Alzheimer's, but I'm like, imagining if our family wasn't there to look after him, imagining somebody in that situation and the government just saying like, well, best of luck, we'll see you at your funeral.
Well, you're about to get extremely angry then, because, okay, I confess I'm not an expert on this, so I'm just doing my best with what I've read.
Yeah.
The current system is that if you want to access the like help for this kind of care, the government's going to add up your assets. So they're going to like look at how much money you have in the bank, and if you have, I think the amount is £24,000 or more, so that's like 50 grand saved or more, then you have to bear a certain amount of the cost, right? But if you have less than that, the government will help you.
Okay.
That's like the crayon version of it.
Right.
And if you want to go into like a long-term home, then they add in the cost of the house you live in. If you own your house, they'll count your house as an asset, and because they assume you're going to sell your house and move into a home, right? And then you have to bear a certain amount of it depending on how much your house is worth or whatever.
Right.
So Theresa May wants to count the house thing in, even if you have someone coming to your home. right? So it's like, oh. so they'll count you as having more assets, mm-hmm. and the way that they're gonna do it is they'll be like, they say they won't collect it until after you die. So after this person who needs this treatment dies, the government will come and take a part of your home sale or right. whatever. But basically.
So wait, does the sheriff of Nottingham do that personally?
Yeah, yeah.
Or like,
I think he literally takes the handwritten deed to yeah. your house and takes it through a series of winding forest paths with four dudes with pikes until. Right. I assume a Muslim comes and takes it from him, or whatever right. it's like right now in the UK.
Right.
No knock against Muslims. Knock against people who don't understand Muslims. So it's a bit old school. And what's weird about this is that it kind of affects significantly like the older, less wealthy base, or the older wealthy base, rather. Mm. Like the older wealthy base gets hit by this a lot harder than other people do, which is like where most of their support comes from. So it's weird that there are things like this in their platform, right? And Jeremy Corbyn was like all over her knocking. Even the papers that are generally pro-conservative were really against this. Mm. They were really harsh on it. Right. And so they're just kind of they're trying to keep Theresa May out of the spotlight, because the more she's in the spotlight, the less people like her,
right.
is basically how this is going. Mm-hmm. Now, the election's on June 8th, so it's a couple weeks away. It'll be interesting to see. The campaign was briefly on hold after the Manchester bombing, so everyone stopped campaigning for a couple of days, but I think most of the parties are given the okay for their candidates to campaign again.
Right.
There was a bit of talk that they might postpone the election, but they haven't done that for a long time, and the last time they did it was in 2001, because there was an outbreak of foot and mouth disease among like the animals in the rural areas of England, and people couldn't travel.
Wait, is foot and mouth disease a real thing?
Apparently. This is
I thought it was just like when someone put their foot in their mouth.
No. Well, I think
like they had foot and mouth
disease. I think it's like a pun on this actual disease that affects like livestock. Yeah.
Where they step in shit and put their feet in their mouth or
something. Yeah, I guess they're always wiping it on themselves. Yeah. I don't know.
Huh.
Anyway, so they're probably not going to...
Cows can't keep their feet out of their mouths.
I know, right?
Yeah.
They should be glad we eat them. That's my take of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where things are at. I'm very curious to see how this is going to play out. You know, I have my fingers crossed for a late labor surge, but you never know.
What would happen if the Queen ran?
Like, just like,
I've wondered that before. Of like, what if the Queen made a move?
I bet she would devastate the voter base on the right. Like, I bet the Queen would just like take so much heat from the right.
Right.
I don't know, actually. I don't have a lot of on the ground information about how British people feel about the monarchy. I know that a lot of Canadian people have a weird like mommy complex with the monarchy, and I'm very much not one of them, but
I always sort of like accepted that as like an antiquated like I think I've mentioned on a previous podcast, like a second generation Ukrainian in Canada speaks an old style of Ukrainian.
Yeah.
And like...
Or like Quebecois French.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an old version. Actually, I guess Canadian English is an mm-hmm. old version of English. But like, the people that came over, like literally their ancestors were colonizing this place in the name of the Queen. And that just got passed down. So like Canadians have this weird,
I would be a big fan of letting the monarchy quietly die with Queen Elizabeth. But like, I don't know, I guess that baby or whatever is going to be the new king or some shit.
Yeah. Well, actually it was interesting. I was watching, and who knows what the bias on this was, but I was watching a thing that was talking about how that would actually be bad for Britain, because the amount of money that their monarchy brings into the country, like for tourism and stuff like that,
good for
is
them.
Crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, they don't do anything anymore, right? They don't have any formal powers anymore.
Right.
But,
hey, fun queen fact. You know why she always wears one color?
Why?
Because nobody wears one color, and it's easier for her security personnel to see her in a crowd.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so she always wears, like, a bright, like, Easter-colored... Yeah,
hey,
everything.
Here's another cool Queen fact. Okay. Did you know that they wrote the Highlander theme on the bus on the way to record the Highlander theme?
I did know that. Yeah, because they forgot about it or something.
Here
like that.
Here we are, born to be kings, we're the princes of the universe.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, man. Yeah. The Queen owns. Never mind. I take it back. The Queen's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's a shame. It's a shame she died of AIDS.
Oh, my God, Richard. I have to tell you something.
What?
I won't tell you on air. I'll tell you later when we're alone.
What are you going to tell me? That Queen Elizabeth is not the lead vocalist of the band Queen?
Oh, Richard. I would never tell you that.
Okay. Oh, that's great, man. I was worried for a second there, but...
Yeah, but she is the lead vocalist of the Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, no, but I hate them. No, they're so good. They're cool.
Yeah. This is very quickly because like you and I are riffing on songs that we know.
Yeah, I feel like we're wrapping up here.
Yeah, so, I think so, too. Okay.
So, yes, that's where the election's at. We'll update it once we... Once the results come out, we'll have a little episode to talk about what happened. And
well, depending on how soon after our pals from Britain get here and we discuss Brexit and stuff, we might be able to.
That's true. It might end up being one big episode or something. It will get brought up again, I'm sure. But until then, if you've heard anything here that infuriates you or tickles your fancy, please let us know. You can reach us on Twitter at explainjamie, at explainittojamie@gmail.com, on soundcloud.com/explainittojamie. We also have an Instagram, I'm told, but rumors of it, you know, are maybe greatly exaggerated.
It only has two photos, but boy, are they good photos.
Both each photo balances and complements the other photo in a perfect never-ending circle.
Yeah, we'll get more on that. I mean, there's just only so many photos of you and I sitting in a closet that you can post.
You say that now, Jamie, but, you know... Theme and variation, man. Theme and variation.
I do want to say, when we had Anthony and Thomas on the podcast the other day, the first thing they said when they came into our recording studio was, oh, like, you guys literally record in your closet.
Yeah, that's not a joke.
No.
The closet doors are open, and we are shoved as far into the closet as we can.
Yeah, I've got my comforter on one door and another blanket on the other door. Good as new.
Just like everyone does in their home, frankly. Haven't you people ever been to an IKEA?
Guys, thanks so much for listening. If you liked it, please share it. If you have something to say, say it. You know, stay vigilant, stay connected. We love you, and we hope to talk into your ears absently again.
God save the queen. She is a queen. Is queen. We're gonna get our citizenships revoked.